I'm here with Steve Burgess and Allison Johnson, who are the two of the Green candidates at the top of the regional list for Lothians. Allison is first on the list, and Steve is second. And we're here at the Botanical Gardens following the Green Party manifesto launch. I wanted to ask you two if you'd like to perhaps pick out a highlight from the manifesto dealing with Edinburgh, policies that would be of particular interest to residents of the city.
Well, I would say, first of all, that our manifesto is a manifesto for Scotland, and therefore everything in it will be relevant to the people of the Lothians. So we have three priority pledges. The first is about protecting public services from the cuts, and that's a policy that very much will affect people in Edinburgh and the Lothians. Right now we're seeing the council proposing millions of pounds in cuts and 1,200 job losses at the council level. That will have a massive impact on the people of Edinburgh, and our policy in the Parliament is to introduce other ways of raising revenue to offset those cuts. And then the other two policies, one is to insulate every home in Scotland, and again there are plenty of homes in Lothians that need insulation, to cut people's fuel bills and reduce climate change and pollution. And then the third priority for us in Holyrood will be no tuition fees. And of course Edinburgh is a university city. There are more than 10,000 students in the city, and that policy is relevant to every single one of them. So I would say that yeah, this is a national manifesto, but it is extremely relevant to everybody in Lothians. I don't know if Alison...
Yeah, I mean, there certainly are three main pledges, and I think most of the contents of our manifesto could apply perfectly well to Lothians when we look at our... we really believe in empowering and devolving power to local authorities, and Edinburgh's been kind of hamstrung by the council tax freeze, but we want us to look at our common good assets. There's some debate about, you know, what's common good and what's not in Edinburgh, and set up a common good trust that would enable community organisations access to funds and so on.
I wanted to follow up on that, in the sense that there's been many stories of sort of arts venues run by social enterprises that have had to close down or are facing the threat of closure or are struggling to get off the ground due to lack of funding. The Labour Party has suggested a loan guarantee scheme to help in situations like that. What elements of the Green Manifesto do you think could help organisations that are struggling in that way?
Well, we're talking about introducing a new Common Good Act, which would introduce democratic common good trusts with the scope to manage the transfer of those assets to the community. So I think if the community had the opportunity to own a bit of land themselves, that's land they could use and choose to do with what they may. They might decide to use it as an arts venue.
And in terms of disused property, are there particular sites or areas of Edinburgh that you feel are affected by what Patrick Harvey was talking about land being held back from development for speculation purposes?
Yes, I mean there are some quite large brownfield sites in Edinburgh that are sitting undeveloped, and at the moment developers pay no penalty for that. They can simply acquire land or sit on land, and they're not paying business rates, they don't pay tax on that, and so they just sit on the land and they're waiting for land prices to go up so that they can increase their profits. One of our proposals would be to introduce a land value tax, and land speculators would have to pay a levy on the land that they own. Now that would be an incentive, if they were having to pay for this empty land, an incentive for them to bring that land back into the economy. Quite a lot of land down at the waterfront in particular, and people are crying out for homes in Edinburgh, so yes.
I wanted to ask about the Fourth Road replacement bridge. It's been opposed by the Green Party since the project was first proposed quite strongly. And yet it's not one of the red line issues for post-election debate with other parties about how government will be formed. I mean, doesn't that mean that really the opposition is more for show, since your party isn't willing to make that a no-compromise issue?
Yeah. No, I mean, we have three red line issues. You can't make all of your policies red line issues, otherwise you can't get into negotiation. What we're saying about the red line issues is that if a party that we're negotiating with is not prepared to make any move on those red line issues, then we will not sit down with them. Otherwise, on all the policies, we're willing to negotiate. Now, our spending proposals that we've got in our manifesto also include cancelling the new extra fourth road bridge and taking the $1.6 billion in savings and investing that in public services, including transport. So that very much is in our plans, and we're absolutely categorical that the second fourth road bridge is not needed. We can, if the present research into dehumidification of the existing cables doesn't work, there's an estimate of $122 million to replace those cables. So the existing bridge, if it needs fixing, can be repaired. There's simply not a need to spend $1.6 billion on another bridge that, incidentally, will have, and the council in Edinburgh is very concerned about the impact of a second road bridge on the city in terms of congestion and pollution. And just to touch on that, Edinburgh is in trouble in terms of transport and emissions from transport. There are three areas in Edinburgh that are air quality management areas where pollution is breaking European standards, safety standards. Now, the council has set out a voluntary programme with freight and with bus companies to try to reduce that pollution. The bridge would only add to that. And it's a serious problem.
I think, you know, touching on your earlier question about empty, unused land, I think a recent shelter survey suggested there were about 10,000 empty homes in Edinburgh. So if we were to review taxation, you know, why are those homes sitting empty when so many people can't afford to get on the housing ladder in Edinburgh? They can't afford to rent a home, they can't find, you know, there's just no building really of public housing. And here we are looking at a bridge that is perhaps being overused because, as Steve has said, a lot of these people are having to travel to Fife. So if we tightened up on our land use and made sure that those homes were being properly used, that they were being filled by families and people that needed them, that would take traffic off that bridge, of that I've no doubt, because we know that a lot of people are commuting backwards and forwards every day. And I think that has a real sort of impact on their quality of life too. You know, we'd like to see people working and living closer. You know, living closer to where they're working. It's all about reducing the amount of time that people have to spend travelling.
And finally, I wanted to ask about Robin Harper, who retired with the dissolution of the last parliamentary session. And he was sort of a very well-recognised figure across Scotland and the first Green candidate to be elected anywhere in the UK. How are the pair of you trying to present yourselves to the Edinburgh public in a way that sort of can deal with that, perhaps that lack of instant name recognition?
I think it's fair to say that Robin's will be a hard scarf to fill. You know, undoubtedly he's one of the most recognisable figures in Scottish politics. I would suggest that he is more widely recognised than some people who've been on the front bench for many years. I know that. Try walking up the Royal Mile with Robin Harper and you will be stopped constantly. So Robin is a great personality and he will be missed. Steve and I both had the privilege of working with him in Parliament from the early days, and, you know, I have to say I was fairly choked when Parliament dissolved there and we were leaving, you know, as a team together for the last time. But we've been working very hard on City of Edinburgh Council. I became involved in politics not through any, you know, probably more traditional route, but because the council decided they were going to build luxury housing flats on my local playing field, and I was so incensed about that I wrote to everyone, and the response I received from Robin sort of chimed with me, and a few years down the line I found myself joining the party and was fortunate enough to become one of his staff members. But I think we've shown on the council that we can get involved in issues that aren't seen as traditionally green issues, have campaigned very hard against the proposal to demolish and reduce Meadowbank Stadium, campaigned hard against the closure of 7 schools. Recently, Steve and I have been involved in opposing the closure of 2 of the city's best nurseries. And the Scottish ministers have actually just called that decision in because they want to have a look at it before it goes ahead. So I think we've shown, you know, I sit on education, children and families, culture and leisure, the audit committee. I hope we're sort of showing in our everyday work that we can engage with people across a wide range of issues.